This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Have you seen an independent drugstore in your neighborhood go out of business? It's not just the little guys. Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid have announced hundreds of closures nationwide, too. Joining me now to talk about the numbers and some of the factors behind these closures are Pharmaceutical Care and Management Association, Senior Director of Policy, and pharmacist Johnny Garcia. Welcome back, Johnny.
Hi, thanks for having me, Lucy.
And Heart Pharmacy owner and pharmacist in charge and member of the Ohio Pharmacists Association of Trust Board of Trustees, Sarah Priestley. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Johnny, how many independent pharmacies are closing across the U.S. and how about the chains? What do the numbers show?
So what we're seeing is nationally, there's about 23,400 independent pharmacies and about 36,200 chain. And we define independent pharmacies as ownership of three or less pharmacies. When we pull numbers using a national database called NCPDP, we're actually seeing in Ohio that the numbers are increasing for independent pharmacies. From 2020 to 2024, they increased about 10%. And we're seeing the reverse, actually, for chain retail pharmacies, where they decreased about 6.5%. And that's kind of spread throughout the rural areas as well as urban. So we're kind of seeing different data than maybe what's being reported by some of our colleagues.
Yeah. Sarah, what are your thoughts on that? Because locally, we've heard about, independent pharmacies closing. How does that jive with what you're seeing?
Yeah. I obviously have lots of friends in independent pharmacy, and certainly they are closing. I know them personally. And also the NCPDP data, looking at that, it's kind of a large swath of when you get a number through NCPDP, that means you have opened a new pharmacy, you have a new NCPDP number. That doesn't always translate into an open door pharmacy that people can go to, right? It might be a 340B pharmacy associated.
What's a 340B pharmacy?
Lots of numbers and acronyms.
Yeah.
So 340B is a federal program where patients who are underserved can get medication. So a lot of times these pharmacies will open up in these federally qualified health centers. And so they kind of are looked at as new independent pharmacies, but really they're not the same as your local drugstore you go to.
Well, so you mentioned, Sarah, that you've got friends who have closed their pharmacies. What are the factors contributing to the closures?
Yeah. So mostly in the last, 20 years, we've seen a significant downturn in reimbursements. And so this has coupled with other things such as many people being forced through their plans to go to mail order, right? So if you're told you can only fill a couple of times at your neighborhood pharmacy and then you have to use the mail order because that's what your plan dictates, you lose business that way. And then the reimbursements truly have gone to where we are sometimes being reimbursed under the cost of the medication that we can acquire, at $500 and we're being paid less than that or whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm. Johnny, I want to get your thoughts on that. You mentioned the data that you're looking at, which I know Sarah has some issues with. You're seeing an increase in independent pharmacies in Ohio, a decrease in the chain pharmacies. For the pharmacies that are closing, what do you think are the factors contributing to that?
We're really trying to dive into this, Lucy, because independent pharmacies are very valuable for our pharmacy networks. We understand that they serve a very large community need. And we saw that specifically in the pandemic. And so, some of the initial thoughts that we have are the decrease in pharmacy student enrollment. So we've seen a 60% decrease over the last 10 years. So we believe there may be a workforce issue. And we're hearing about that a lot in the news, where pharmacists are being burnt out and seeing issues in the pharmacies in terms of staffing. We also believe that there may be something with online shopping. Not as many people are going into the stores as much as they used to, and that includes pharmacy. When you have major online platforms like Amazon, Mark Cuban's GoodRx that are taking some of the prescription volume, that could be impacting some of the independent pharmacies as well. Population shifts coming out of the rural pharmacies and rural communities. People are moving more to an urban type setting. And then just store density. There's a lot of places where pharmacies are in large density. And so there's just a lot of closures because that area cannot support that many pharmacies.
Sarah, do you think those factors are contributing?
It's a very complicated landscape, right? Pharmacy and healthcare is very complicated. I will say that the stores I see closing are very busy stores. They're not stores that are low volume. I will also say that independent pharmacy in general has very good and stable workforce. You know, we definitely have, you know, pharmacists that want to take over for other pharmacies if there are stores that are profitable, right? You're not going to take over a store that is on the verge of bankruptcy. That's a terrible business decision for a new pharmacist to make. So, I mean, you know, there are many factors that accompany all of these things, but we are an advocate for pharmacy choice, right? So if a patient wants to come to me, they should come to me. And I always tell people, if every patient who wanted to come to my pharmacy, that, you know, the reimbursements were the same, the coverage was the same, the copay was the same, I would be so busy I'd have to expand.
Johnny, you're with the Pharmaceutical Care Management Association that represents pharmacy benefit managers. Explain what pharmacy benefit managers are, what they do.
Yep. So most people probably recognize a pharmacy benefit manager through their insurance card. So when you go to the pharmacy and the pharmacist asks you to present your insurance to pay for your prescription, you give them your policy, your little card. And on the back of that would have pharmacy benefit manager that processes the claims. So we work with employers to create the pharmacy benefit portion, figuring out the cost for the patient, the out-of-pocket costs, you know, how much the pharmacies are reimbursed, which pharmacies are part of the network. So as Sarah was saying that, you know, she wants to be part of the network, which is the pharmacies that are covered by your insurance plan. That's something the employer helps dictate of who's in and who's out, depending on the pricing and how much they want to negotiate. Pharmacy benefit managers also help drive the cost of medications down. So we work directly with drug manufacturers and try to reduce those prices to the insurers so they're not paying the fullest price. There may be some kind of rebate or some kind of price concession to help bring that price down.
I want to ask you about an FTC report that was issued earlier this month. The FTC, this report says that pharmacy benefit managers are profiting at the expense of patients and independent pharmacies. It says PBMs can hike the cost of drugs, including overcharging patients for things like cancer drugs. Johnny, how do you respond to that? What do you think about this FTC report?
So the issue that we have with the FTC report is that it was a lot of comment and a lot of anecdotes. There wasn't really a lot of empirical data behind their analysis. So for a preliminary report, it's really hard to justify where they're getting this information. In fact, they cited a lot of anonymous sources. And so it's hard for us to check the facts on that. Nothing has shown that PBMs raise drug prices. And there was nothing in that report that said that independents are reimbursed any less than our chain pharmacies.
Sarah, what's your experience been working with PBMs? Kind of explain their role from your perspective.
Sure. You know, unfortunately, the independent pharmacies tend to get take it or leave it contracts. So they get contracts that are sent to us. And a lot of us use something called a PSAO, or they help us with our contracting because it's hard to do if, you know, if there's so many contracts for an independent pharmacy to do. So anyway, but those contracts tend to be take it or leave it for the most part. And that was discussed in the House Oversight Committee last Tuesday, and where the PBMs were brought in front of the House Oversight Committee. And, you know, we don't have a lot of negotiation. We're told, you know, you can send back, you know, you can redline the contract, you can send back suggestions. In my opinion, it hasn't happened very often. The contracts are pretty much like, if you want to be in the network, here it is. And if you don't want to be in the network, then that's it.
Johnny, what do you think about that? I mean, that can, I would imagine, I'm not a pharmacist, goodness knows, but if you've got one location having a take it or leave it kind of rate reimbursement feels very different than a big chain that can maybe spread losses or prices that don't quite mesh with their business across lots of different locations and products and things. Is there a take it or leave it kind of contracting that independent pharmacists encounter when it comes to working with PBMs?
So I think, you know, one of the key things to point out, so in Ohio, 84% of independent pharmacies are represented by a PSAO. So Sarah brought that up. And they have very large powers. They are represented by some of the three largest wholesalers. So they deal with the contracting of the pharmacy and the PBM, as well as the drug purchasing from the wholesaler. So they have a lot intertwined into that. Some of those PSAOs are much larger than some of even the bigger retailers, such as a Walgreens or a CVS, when you combine the total power of the independent pharmacy. So it's definitely not the small guys versus the big guys when they're represented by PSAOs. We also do have some opportunities where independents directly negotiate their contract with a PBM. And that's just because they don't want to go with the PSAO. They absolutely have that right. So, you know, it's a lot of these contracts are not necessarily take it or leave it. There's a lot of performance guarantees and things that independent pharmacies need to hit in order to become part of those networks. That's something that's requested of the employers to be competitive in the marketplace. So when they want to send their employee to a pharmacy, they want to make sure that pharmacy can provide certain services, have certain drugs that they need, be able to do that with high quality at a price that is affordable for that employer as well.
I have the benefit of seeing Sarah's eyebrows raise when during some of that response because she's in the studio with me. Sarah, you want to speak to that?
Yeah. So the quality thing, I mean, that was the part I kind of raised my eyebrows at. You know, the measures of quality are tenuous at best. You know, they are based on, you know, patients taking a medication, but it's not based on, you know, taking into account that patient's ability to take the medicine, their access to the medicine, you know, the fact that some pharmacies deliver and some pharmacies, you know, do packaging for them. Like, none of that's really taken into account when they say they'll reimburse you, quote unquote, better if you reach those quality metrics. They're very hard to do. And they're very hard to do when you have, you know, only so many patients enrolled and there's a percentage. Like, it's a big algorithm that's usually very hard to hit. And so it's hard to reach those incentives.
We're talking about why drug stores have closed in your neighborhoods around the country. Has your access to a pharmacy changed in the last year or two? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. So I think a lot of people listening are thinking, so why are some prescription drug prices so high, especially drugs that don't have a generic alternative? Johnny, what do PBMs play a role there, or is it more the manufacturer side of things?
Yeah, so the PBMs are not the one that sets the price when a drug comes out. So think of this like a car manufacturer, where the car manufacturer sets the MSRP. It's very similar in the drug space, where a manufacturer takes into account the time to develop these medications, and they come up with the cost. There's no real way and no transparent way to tell what that true cost is. So what we're starting to see is a lot of these medications are coming out that are very effective, but very specialized. And so they're considered specialty medications. And we've seen some of these medications, such as hepatitis C drugs, come out that are true cures, but it's an $80,000 cure. And so we're starting to see that coming into the market more and more. So drugs are coming in at a higher price than they have in the past. You know, the average price for a brand name or biological products is somewhere around that $200,000 a year mark now, whereas in the past, it was nowhere near that. It was only in the thousands. And so that's definitely a drug manufacturer. The PBMs come in and play a role in negotiating those prices down, working with the drug manufacturers to get volume discounts. So using our formularies, which is the list of drugs that the PBM or the employer is willing to cover, getting those on there as well, making the manufacturers compete with each other. So when there are two brand name medications that work the same or have the same therapeutic effectiveness, then that's where the PBM comes into play and tries to get the price down for the consumer and the employer.
Can I just make a comment on the specialty drug front? So many, many independent pharmacies are not doing specialty drugs because it is any drug that is deemed a specialty drug, which are usually these very high-priced medications. Patients are forced to use specialty pharmacies, and almost all of those are owned by the PBM or somewhere in the vertical integration of the insurer or the PBM, or the specialty pharmacy, or the mail order pharmacy. All of those are the same company many times. And so the patients are forced to something that is owned by the PBM.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, though, some of that is also dictated by the manufacturer. So there's limited distribution drugs, which are very highly specialized, that require special reporting to the FDA, and specific patient monitoring. And so the manufacturer, when they're going through the approval process, determines that those are limited distribution drugs. And they select the pharmacy that can dispense those. And oftentimes they are larger retailers because they have the capabilities to monitor those patients correctly. And that's somewhere around 60% of the market are limited distribution drugs in the specialty space.
Well, and Sarah, I guess I'm wondering, when it comes to specialty drugs, is this a case where an independent pharmacy may barely break even if they are kind of dipping their toes into that market a little bit?
Yeah. You know, it's a few pharmacies do it because it's a big risk monetarily, right? So if you dispense a specialty drug and then you are at risk, you know, for then being audited, that you billed it properly and that you did the right thing, and that's fine. There should be, you know, back-checking measures. But in that same vein, you know, you're taking a risk on something where if you do something that would maybe even be considered like a clerical error, or something happens with the billing, you know, sometimes you're taking a risk of $100,000, you know. So there are a lot of independent pharmacies that, you know, don't do it for that reason. But, I mean, again, they are many times not allowed in a specialty pharmacy market.
We did get an email from Paul. Paul says he had an issue with his pharmacy. He tried to go to the Rite Aid location where he'd been getting his, where he'd been doing his pharmacy business, and used his OTC card from his health insurance. He got there. There was a sign that said store closing. He wasn't surprised. He went in and they still had the items he needed, but they said his card wouldn't cover them. He couldn't pay for them himself. He went to a different pharmacy that wasn't a Rite Aid. They did cover the items that he needed with his card. He said, I thought to myself, I wondered where people are going to be able to go, brick and mortar stores, and talk to someone they know about the different items they need and the coverage they can get. Sarah, from look on your face, I'm guessing you feel like this is where independent pharmacies have that kind of personal service.
Sure. Yes, independent pharmacy and brick and mortar in general, you know, people need access to a pharmacist, and a lot of times they need access to a pharmacist in person. You know, the mail orders of the world, you know, you can call a pharmacist, but sometimes you need to have a pharmacist look at something, you know, like he was saying, it was over-the-counter medications. Like, what if you have some poison ivy and you need a cream for that? Like, a pharmacist can look at that and talk to you and counsel you through that. And you also pay pharmacists that you trust, right? Pharmacists you've used for years, pharmacists that know you, know your family, know your kids. And that doesn't happen, you know, at a mail order or at somewhere where you're calling a database of pharmacists.
Johnny, are the reimbursement rates different for pharmacy chains that have PBMs affiliated with them? I mean, Sarah was talking about this vertical integration, that sometimes there's this ownership connection between pharmacies and pharmacy benefit managers and insurance companies. Are the reimbursement rates different for those pharmacy chains?
Yeah, so we're, you know, we've done a lot of analysis on that as well. So the FTC report did not really go much into the increased costs of the vertical alignment. The House Oversight tried to dive into that as well, but wasn't able to get any information on that as well. There's been a couple of white papers that have been released recently. And so one of them was actually by CVS last week, which went into their reimbursement rates for independent pharmacies versus their own chain pharmacies. And in that white paper, it showed that the independents were profiting more. In fact, the National Association that represents independent pharmacies, NCPA, has often stated that the reimbursements for independent pharmacies are somewhere around 21% profit for medications. So we're not really seeing much of an impact to the independent pharmacies, as they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, there's also a lot of data coming out from other independent analysis. So Three Axis Advisors is one. And they just came out with a report where they took a lot of Medicare data and did not find the same thing. So, I mean, part of it is that there is a very complex system that is not very transparent. And in the FTC report, it says that the PBMs have not given all the information, you know, to the FTC as requested. So there's just a lot of moving pieces. And as we say, the more complex, the less we see, right? So the more area there is to make the data go where you want it to go, right? Statistics to go where you want them to go. So I would say that the complexity is part of the problem, and the non-transparent nature of the entire system is a problem.
We got an email from Rita. Rita emails, despite our insurance company's best efforts to force us towards online or big box pharmacies, we intend to stay with our local pharmacy here in Northside, Shapers. May cost a touch more, but for now it works. Good service, and they're always willing to work with us. Independents need our support. I want to make sure we get to talk about legislation that's aimed at addressing this. Sarah, what's happening in Ohio at the state level?
Yeah, so in Ohio, we have House Bill 505. I gave testimony on it last month. And it will regulate some of the practices of the PBMs. It basically will say that they need to reimburse us for the cost of the medication and give us our professional fee for being the pharmacist. And that is how Ohio Medicaid is operating in the state of Ohio. So it mimics a lot of the reforms that happened.
And Johnny, in just about 10 or 15 seconds, thoughts on that? Have you all taken a position on this bill in Ohio?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, we support pharmacists practicing at the top of their license. And so when we take all the factors into consideration, we do that. I would say the pharmacist community needs to be careful in what they're proposing, because we did see a 17% decrease in some of those national reimbursements.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been talking with Pharmaceutical Care Management Association Senior Director of Policy and pharmacist Johnny Garcia, and Heart Pharmacy owner and pharmacist in charge and member of the Ohio Pharmacists Association Board of Trustees, Sarah Priestley. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.